Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, we live in a world where we are outnumbered by microbes. They are everywhere, in, on, and around us. And they can do amazing things, from improving our mood to surviving in the vacuum of space. But what if they could help us with our plastic pollution problem? My next guest is Ludmilla Aristilda. She's an environmental engineering professor at Northwestern. She joins me now. Welcome to the program, Ludmilla. This idea of engineering microbes to do good, it's not a new one, but it's a really exciting one. Tell me a little bit about the basic. When we talk about microbes, we're talking about more bacteria than viruses or any type of microbe?
We're talking more bacteria, because bacteria have very complex metabolism. They also have the ability to do so many things. As we know, we have beneficial bacteria in our gut that really helps us to be healthy. We also have bacteria in the environment, in soils, for example. We have bacteria that really allows nitrogen and carbon to be recycled in soils. We can also harness the ability of bacteria to treat contaminants in the environment.
The idea that bacteria could help us do something like reduce plastic pollution seemed crazy a few decades ago, but this idea has gained traction. We now have bacteria that can break down plastics in our environment. Can you explain how bacteria does something like that?
Yes. So bacteria in general, they have capabilities to digest hard to digest materials. Like if you think about it, I like to give an example. If you're someone who loves to hike and you walk around a forest or a mountain and you will see wood on the soil, and eventually this wood will be decaying and degrading over a long period of time. And there are microbes that are doing that. Now, the chemistry of this wood, there's a lot of similarity between that chemistry and the chemistry that you'll find in plastics. So we, in my lab, we work on microbes that can do this kind of hard to digest kind of metabolism. And then we went out and explored whether or not they can actually eat plastics as their food.
What is it that's so persistent about plastics again? Because these are from natural resources, right? This is a byproduct of oil, petrochemicals.
Yes.
These are carbon-based structures. Why are they so persistent, and how do the bacteria overcome that?
Yes. So there are different types of plastics. I like to highlight that. So they're so persistent because of their carbon-to-carbon bond. Essentially, it is a bond that is really hard to break.
Right.
But also there are types of plastics that are easier to break than others, because these plastics also have some oxygen that are spaced out within the structure of carbon to carbon bond. Now, what makes it really hard is actually breaking it, because plastic is a polymer. So polymer is a repeat of the same unit over and over again. And it's hard to break because the microbes, what they eat, it's something like sugar or something that is more simpler than a polymer. So in order for a microbe to be able to eat a polymer like a plastic, they first have to break it down into really small pieces and break that down into smaller pieces, and then be able to get something that is able to, they can digest.
So, there are naturally occurring bacteria that can already do that. Is that correct?
Yes.
How do we discover those?
Yes. So in my work specifically, I can give an example. It was observed in the environment. If you find like plastics pellets or microplastics, so microplastics are part of the smaller fragments that I'm talking about. So they're smaller than the original material. What was reported in the environment, people have observed a certain community of bacteria, they were seen to be consistently enriched on these microplastics. So then in my lab, we're like, okay, if they're enriching on these small pieces of plastic, then they were found in multiple rivers, in city, like urban rivers. So we asked the question, is it possible that they enrich, you know, these communities of microbes that enrich on these plastics because they can potentially use it as food? And that's how we went into this kind of path to try to figure this out. And the bacteria that we were specifically working on were isolated from wastewater. So wastewater has a lot of plastics in it.
Yeah.
So typically natural microbes that are isolated to eat plastics are almost always isolated in places where you do have a lot of plastics to begin with, because then the microbes don't have their natural food source. So then they have to rely on the fact that, well, the only thing I have around is this plastic. Let me see if I can use my machinery that I already have to degrade something else. Let's see if I can munch on this plastic as a source of food.
Yeah. And so we've identified those bacteria. Now we know that there are some bacteria that eat plastic. How do we get them to eat a lot of plastic? Because we think of a bacteria, bacteria is microscopic. And if you look at just my weekly output of plastic, even though I try to reduce it, it's horrifying. And that's just one family in one country. We are producing so much plastic that we need to find bacteria that can dissolve this stuff into something useful at an enormous scale. How do we change that?
Yes. And so there are multiple steps to think about. There is first, how do we turn the polymer that I talked about? So how do you turn your plastic bottle, for example, or your plastic bag, or your plastic jug of containers into something that is micro and nanoscale? And then that's one step. And there are enzymes that can do that, but chemical engineers have also developed chemical treatments that can break that down into smaller pieces. And then you have the second part is to take those things that are pre-degraded, either using enzymes, which can be sourced for microbes, or using chemical treatments, which we're just using a special chemical. Then we take that, you know, that product, and then we feed it to microbes. Now, as you rightly pointed out, microbes are very tiny. When they're actually using this naturally, they're using it just for their little microscopic bodies. They're not doing it for the benefit of society, which is huge.
Yeah.
So the way to do that is to concentrate the waste stream. So you have a stream of plastic waste. You will concentrate it into a bioreactor in order to have just the microbes that can do it. Because in the environment, there's a lot of competition of microbes with other things and other food sources.
Yeah.
So the way to do this, I think, would be to leverage using bioreactors to do this. The other thing to think about is that we can engineer the microbe to do it even faster or better, or to do it even more than what they would do naturally. This is why a lot of scientists, including me and other groups, we are trying to understand what is the machinery of this bacterium, like what is the metabolism, what is the pathway, what are the genes are involved, so that we can actually engineer those pathways and those genes to make them do what we want as a society for them to do for us.
Right. And there's various ways we can manipulate these bacteria into doing that, right? And that your job is figuring out what tools these bacteria have so that we can then replicate that and enhance it. I mean,
exactly.
If I were to throw a skeptical eye over this, I would say this is interesting work, but it is not a solution to my problem. Is there anything that you see in your research that suggests that on a major scale, we can take the plastic waste that we produce and make any, even 0.01% dent on what we're producing by using bacterial breakdown in this way?
Yes, I like to think of it as one of the ways if we're going to tackle the issue. I think any major issue, a global issue, shouldn't be tackled with one solution. I believe we should come at it at multiple fronts. I think the advantage of microbes is that microbes do not need the waste stream to be pure or to be just one entity. There are some chemical treatments that we can do. There are other things that we can do that require that you have the waste stream to be just not as complex. So the microbes and the bacteria that we're using, they are from the environment. They are used to being exposed to a complex food source. The other thing I think that is really particular about microbes in general, and I would say specifically the bacteria that we work on, is that we can use the bacteria not just to eat the plastics, but to convert it into a product. This is what's called biomanufacturing.
Right.
And that's very attractive.
Yeah. So and so what sort of products, if a bacteria eats my yogurt pot, what useful output can a bacteria give me?
Again, it depends on the bacterial species. We work with bacteria that produce some acids, so very short, not a lot of carbon chain acids that can be used as a precursor to pharmaceuticals, for example. We have some of the bacteria that we work on that can produce polymers that have structures that are very similar to the polymers that we actually make from petroleum. That's the part that I'm very excited about. Is there a world in which we can use microbes to turn plastics into precursors to plastics? And that is the circular solution that is very attractive that we as scientists who work in this field would like to achieve.
Yeah. Again, the idea seems great, but the industry required to do this at scale, I mean, I know you say that it's not, it's part of the solution, but is this approach realistically not a tiny part of the solution?
I say at this point, we don't know how much is going to be part of, like, what fraction is going to represent in the total solution. That is way beyond my expertise.
Yeah.
But I just wanna, what I could say is that I don't expect this to be the only solution, but also it depends on how much do we invest in this.
Yeah.
Right. So I like to give the example, for example, that when I was a little girl, like solar panels was not thought to be something that was economically viable.
Yeah.
And now it's everywhere, yeah. Right? Because we've invested in it and we've made improvements, and it's become something that is now well accepted societally. And now we use it everywhere. And I would imagine that this part of the solution, not the whole solution, but this part of the solution that's so attractive that could actually provide some avenue that other solutions do not provide. Yeah. If we make the proper investment, it could lead to really good dividends on the other end.
Is it dangerous to engineer a bacteria and release it into the wild? Like when you're researching this sort of thing, is it difficult to keep a hold on what you're researching so that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't end up reproducing in the wild and causing adverse effects? Is that an actual concern?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Because I'm studying the natural ability, and so I'm studying the bacteria that already have, like, they're in the environment to begin with. But definitely, if we are engineering bacteria and we are putting new genes, I mean, in this case, if we're putting harmful genes, for example, or harmful pathways, we should think about containment. And as I mentioned earlier, if you use bioreactors, when this is not something we're just releasing in the wild, I like to point out that I don't believe just using this bacteria and putting in the wild is going to work as well as it worked when we have just one species of bacteria that is working on this, because in the wild, they one, have to compete with other microbes.
Yeah.
And two, in the wild, we have other yummier food than the plastics for the microbes to eat.
Yeah. So the micro, right? So if you put this in the wild, it's not going to work as well. Whereas if you basically give the microbes nothing to eat but plastic in a contained environment, they're much more likely to give you the outcome
exactly.
that you're looking for. Yeah.
Exactly.
That solar panel analogy, I think, is really good. I just hope that we find something that is better than what we're doing at the moment. And it would be really interesting to see if we can engineer something that will have a good outcome here. What is the biggest challenge to this research? Presumably it's that scale.
Yeah. Scale is a challenge. To be able to have that, the phenotype. So essentially to have, let's say, I know I have this bacterium. I know it can do what I want it to do. Now, can I engineer it to have a certain behavior? Let's say, you know, to break the polymer better or to make another product. Can I have that sustain over multiple generations of this bacteria? And rightly so, the scalability. Of yeah. all this, it's something that to think about. And also, as I mentioned, to circle back to the solar panel analogy, are we going to invest in this and for this to be economically viable? Because there's no solution that's going to be fully implemented if it's not going to be economically viable.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I'm all for blue sky research. Something else might come out of this research that could be really, really beneficial. So exploring it for the sake of exploring it is certainly worthwhile. you know, whether or not it's going to be a significant part of our challenge to reduce plastic is a really interesting question. Thank you so much for joining us, Ludmilla. Arcilda is environmental engineering professor at Northwestern University in the States. Ludmilla, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.